What's up, RBLR Nation? Hope you're all having a great week, great day, great night, whenever you're listening to us, whether it's live or on demand. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. I am one of your co-hosts of the RBLR Bulls show, Mr. Carter Brantley, and I am joined today by Mr. Musab Tariq. My man, how are you doing today?
So far, so good. It's another beautiful week to be talking about some USF athletics. So
that's right.
As always, man, there's always something going on, a whole lot going on. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about some USF sports. It's a little bit of a lighter week in terms of basketball or football, more the traditional college sports, if you will. But there was still a lot going on across the USF athletics department in terms of baseball, softball, track and field seasons right around the corner. So Mr. Musab Tariq has some real cooked up facts for that. Then we got women's lacrosse and volleyball, and or beach volleyball, I should specify. So we'll get into all of that. But before we do, if you're here for your first time or if you're tuning back in and you haven't already, please hit that like and subscribe button if you like what you hear and you want to stay up to date to everything USF Bulls athletics related. We'll keep you covered. All right, let's get into it. We'll start with the men's basketball team. I know nothing really happened this past week, but there was a bit of news. Isaiah Nelson was named the NABC D1 All-Star team. He was named to that team, which is really fun. But more depressing news, Wes Enos enters the transfer portal with a do not contact tag. Musab, I don't know about you, man, but that do not contact tag is kind of ominous. It's not great. It's usually not a good sign that he's going to return to USF, although who knows. But were you surprised to see that Wes Enos is entering the transfer portal, or was it kind of like, well, this was bound to happen after Coach Hodgson left?
Yeah, I feel like it was bound to happen whether Hodgson was there or not. It's just, you know, the program doing so well. I mean, he's a great player as well, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, came from a D2 program, had a great, you know, great year with the USF, and he's probably just looking for something bigger. And I mean, there's also on top of that, you know, maybe he's also just bummed out with Hodgson leaving, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know, you know, but what I will say is the do not contact tag. I don't know. I think this may be my first time kind of coming across a basketball transfer portal do not contact.
Yeah.
This guy, I don't know, the way I kind of, you know, took away that kind of do not contact statement was just kind of like maybe he already has like someone in mind, or
right, that's kind of where my
thought. I guess because, you know, you have to enter the portal, you know, as a formality, of course, but, you know, perhaps he's already got his mind on someone or school.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if he ends up at Providence. You know, I mean, I know that's kind of cynical, but at the same time, it's a very real possibility. We've already seen it with the football team, with Alex Golish doing a lot of the same things, with the USF Bulls roster sort of turning it into an Auburn Bulls situation, which, you know, taking a team that failed to win the American Conference and trying to have them compete in the SEC is certainly one way to do things. Regardless, Wes Enos was outstanding this past year for the USF Bulls. Obviously struggled in that March Madness game against Louisville. You know, really, really had a tough time putting the ball in the basket. Just had a rough scoring night, rough shooting day for him. But regardless, he was a big reason why they were there in the first place. So he's going to be a tough guy to replace for sure. But yeah, you know, it's part of it. It's part of the college sport experience right now, unfortunately. Just kind of a nasty side of the business. But hey, you know, it's part of it, and we got to talk about it. We got to address it.
The tough part is just like, is just USF is kind of just one of those kind of schools, I guess. You know, it's just
right. I mean, for coaches and for players.
For coaches and players, and for football and basketball, it's kind of just like, just when, you know, things are looking nice in the right. USF athletics world, which they still will be. I imagine that it's just, you know, we're always going to be the star player of JV.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's a stepping stone program. It's not where,
yeah,
not where people seem to want to stick around.
Yeah.
But speaking of that, those coaches, they did bring in Chris Mack for the men's team to replace Coach Hodgson, and Christy Curry from Alabama was the person they decided to lead the helm for women's basketball. These are two incredibly experienced coaches I was really impressed with these hires. I know you and Johnny probably talked about it last week when I missed the episode, but I kind of wanted to rehash it just because it's such massive news. Like, we can spend at least a couple weeks talking about it. I was real impressed with Chris Mack's resume. I mean, him being able to take Xavier to the Sweet 16 so often and then moving on to Louisville was really cool too. He obviously got them to number one at one point. And Christy Curry at Alabama. I mean, Alabama is a big time program for a reason. Mustafa, did you have any other thoughts after kind of some more time has passed on these two hires for the USF basketball program?
I'm excited just because, yeah, I mean, they bring so much experience to the table. Both have amazing resumes. I also kind of wanted to, I'm happy you brought up this topic again, just because it just made me think, just not just basketball, but also our football programs and, you know, the rest of our athletic programs, you know, just how new it is. You know what I'm saying? How new it is. And it's like a new era, I guess. That's just, the way I feel about it. So overall, I'm just nothing but optimistic. I've heard great things. I've seen great things. So I'm just kind of curious to see, how it works. And I forgot to ask Jonathan this, last week with, these coaches kind of coming along and how it works when they want to bring their guys or their gals, you know what I'm saying? Sure. With College of Charleston and Alabama, how many, how that works, who can you bring or who's able to come or maybe who wants to come as well.
Right. Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, with the NIL stuff and with the kind of the free reign of that style of, just doing things, I think, for the most part, I think it's kind of like the Wild West, so to speak. If there's a coach that he or she wants to bring in, then I think they're pretty much able to do it. I'd imagine there's maybe some specific that goes into like buying out contracts and whatnot. But you never really know. It's a really interesting aspect of it from a coaching staff perspective, and it gets even more interesting with the players, because the players, it's really the Wild West. I mean, it's really, it's really even more so that kind of style. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see who sticks around from the current roster. I haven't heard anything about Pinion or CJ Brown. Obviously, Isaiah Nelson is moving on to the NBA draft. He was out of eligibility anyways. So, good luck to him on the next level, obviously, and hoping nothing but the best for him. It'd be really cool to have a USF Bull be in the NBA. We don't have that whole lot. Dominique Jones was kind of the last pure USF guy. I know that I think Youngblood is on the Oklahoma City Thunder, but he's on a two-way deal and he transferred from USF. So even if you want to get technical, I don't even really necessarily think of him as a bona fide USF Bull, but yeah, we'll see. We'll keep talking about the basketball teams because there's going to be some recruiting news. There's going to be some transfer portal news as it continues to happen. We'll be talking about it here. But moving on to baseball, they had a little series against the Charlotte 49ers this past weekend. They unfortunately took a series loss. Game one was a tough one, 11-2. They got absolutely trounced on the road, dropped them to 21-5, and they're perfectly 500 in American Conference play, 2-2. Edwin Alesia had a rough one, 6 runs over 4 1/3 innings, not really great. And Charlotte had 3 home runs too, all of them 2-run homers. So kind of tough, but there was some fun stuff. Jevan Relaford, he swiped his 18th bag of the season. He's a top 20 base stealer in the NCAA. That's kind of fun. And Brad Kitlowry and Lance Triple both extended their on-base streaks to 13 and 11 respectively. So that was kind of fun. But Friday nights, it's kind of a continued thing now. USF has now dropped the opening game of both conference series that they've played in this year. Not a great trend, obviously one that they're hoping to buck this weekend when they play Memphis. Game two, they bounce back with a 9-5 win, working 9-5, 22-5 overall, 3-2 in the American, obviously. Michael Sané had a really tremendous game on the mound. He worked through seven innings. It was kind of a grind, but that extended his record to 5-0 for the year, for those that care about wins and pitcher wins and losses. And then Ethan Sutton managed to come in and slam the door in the final two innings. It was his sixth save of the year. The offense obviously exploded. Jacob Green had his first homer of the year, a three-run shot in the second. That really set the tone, and it gave USF a 5-0 lead, which they never relinquished. Brad Killorey continued his on-base streak, and he did so with a 4-for-5 performance. Really impressive stuff. Gabe Growlo also drove in three runs. He was excellent. And Jake Lutz, he went 3-for-5 with an RBI as well. USF had 15 total hits for the game. They really had an offensive explosion there in that second game. But then the third game was similar to the first game, lost 10-3 in the rubber match. Not great. So they emerged 22-6 overall out of this game, and 3-3 mark in American Conference play. That was a Landon Yorick start, and he really struggled. He didn't even record an out, unfortunately. So Nolan Bernard took over, and he took the loss. He gave up 6 runs over 4 innings of relief work. That's a tough thing to be put into. I mean, to be kind of thrown into the fire like that. So, you know, not great work in the conference play so far. I was kind of optimistic for this baseball team because they were really off to a hot start. They were in a lot of top 25 rankings, but unfortunately things didn't really get better in off conference play when they returned home to play Bethune-Cookman. They took a 6-5 loss, first loss at home to them since 2012. Really, really tough stuff. And that made them lose the home and away season series to Bethune-Cookman 2-0. They got swept. So it was really tough. Dominic Pont Bryant, he had a really strong start, but unfortunately, Will Allen was unable to keep that hot streak going as he was given the loss, and he gave up 6 runs in the 5th inning. It was a tough night. So we'll see. They're going to, like I said, they're going to play the Memphis Tigers starting Thursday. But yeah, we'll see, man. And did you have any thoughts from these baseball games? I know I kind of went rapid fire through that
news. No, dude. Here's to better things, man. Just, you know, obviously, you know, hearing the same kind of names, it's always nice to see, you know, with Lance Triple, Brad Killorey, and then Michael Sine, man, only a freshman on fire. He's 5-0 now this season. So,
yeah, he's pitching real well.
Yeah. I want to see what's next. And, once we get into kind of the conference, you know, more into the conference competition.
Yeah.
What goes on from there? So,
yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're a good team. You know, they've got some talent. They played really well in those non-conference games, and unfortunately, that success hasn't translated to the conference games quite yet. But all the faith in the world, it's they've still got some time to make up some ground for sure. Speaking of, we'll move on to the softball team because they also had a series in which they played a conference opponent. This time it was Wichita State, the Shockers, and they managed to take home a 2-1 series victory. And it really could have been a sweep too. The first game was their only loss, and it went extras. It went into 11 innings. They only lost 5-4. And it was off of a throwing error in the 11th inning. It was just tough, but you know, they really hung in there. Olivia Elliott, she had 4 hits, while Alex Wilkes and Alexa Galagani, they also extended their respective reach base streaks. So that was really fun. And the Bulls were kind of on the ropes, but they managed to put together a 3-run inning in the bottom of the 7th to force extra play because they were down most of the game. But they came back and managed to force things into extras. So that was really fun. Bella Sarjda, she had 7 innings of relief work, really yeoman's work out of the bullpen. And that one run that she allowed was unearned. So she took the loss, but it was kind of one of those tough losses where probably didn't really deserve it, but the loss has to go to someone. The next two games, they won 3-1 and 6-3 respectively. Some really great pitching performances. Denia Brooks also at the plate, 2-for-2. And she had 6 assists on the defensive end. The ball was finding her a lot. And they were using a lot of the small ball tactics in such a low scoring game. Sacrifice fly from Alexa Galagani. It was some really nice stuff. And first baseman Jemiah Nelson, she was really, really nice at first. They had 14 put outs. So defensively, they were really putting in work. So now they have, they're 18-1 on the season when they're holding their opponents to 2 or fewer runs. That's really impressive stuff. It sort of shows what they're about. They're certainly a pitching and defense team, and they're doing their thing. And then third game, the rubber match, they took home a 6-3 victory, moved them into a tie for first place. And it was really impressive stuff. Denia Brooks, again, her second consecutive multi-hit game. She was really impressive. And Kathy Garcia-Soto even had a two RBI triple in the second inning that loomed really large in a three-run victory. So that was really fun. The Bulls maintained their 17-0 perfect record when scoring six or more runs in a contest. So it shows that they not only have great pitching and defense, they can light it up sometimes on the scoreboard too. So now they're headed to San Antonio, Texas against UTSA. They've got a three-game conference series that begins on Thursday. So really fun stuff. And Musab, remind me, there was some AAC honors for Ann Long, right? She had a pretty impressive little weekend, yeah?
Yeah, a little 2-0 record. 0.66 ERA, four strikeouts, 10 innings pitched. So, I mean, yeah, she was on fire. She got love from the American Athletic Conference and the National Fast Pitch Coaching or Coaches Association. So I thought that was pretty neat that not just one, but two, you know, organizations had recognized her. So, yeah, man.
Yeah, man. I mean, she was a big reason why they were so successful this past weekend. I mean, we were talking about pitching defense. She was really their ace. She was their best pitcher, and she continues to put in work on the mound or in the circle, I should say. Excuse me. She's doing some really tremendous things out there. USF softball team really cooking right now. Similar to the, you know, both them and the baseball team are having a really, really solid season. Even if it doesn't culminate in, I'm sure, where they want to go, it's still been a very, very good effort. Really encouraging stuff from Coach Erickson and the gals on the softball side of things. So, we'll keep talking about it. We'll keep monitoring it moving forward. But the track season's on the way. Mr. Treek, what you got on the track team, huh?
Yes, sir. Yep. Outdoor track season is just around the corner. Just some kind of preseason news is that the American Athletic Conference had put USF men's track team at number one and the women's track team at number six. So, a little bit more recognition from the United States Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association, as well as the Track and Field, you know, kind of rating index, which is, you know, how they do the rankings. USF men's officially have cracked the top 20, checking in at number 20 in the first, you know, rankings for the outdoor season. So that was really big. And on top of that, it's not just, big for us, but I mean, we've also we're higher than, you know, several major Power Four programs, including, you know, the University of Florida, Michigan State, Auburn, and Clemson. So our 4x4 squad with Singleton, Nathan Medalis, Crum, and Monfries, they hold the number two rank right now in the nation with a time of 3:05.60. On top of that, Jaleel Kroll, he actually ranks right now third in the country in the 100 meters. While Nathan Medalis ranks 13th in the 200 meters. So I'm excited to see what they do this upcoming weekend, as well as Kareem Belmadi, who is our 800-meter threat, and Jaden Smith and Darian Mills, also in the top 30 rankings for their positions. As I just mentioned, curious or excited to see what they do this weekend and where are they going to be this weekend? They're going to be starting their outdoor season at the UF Relays.
There you go.
This is kind of like the big kind of season opener, you know, kind of track event. And on top of that, you're going to be going against, first of all, you know, some real good programs, and it's outdoor, but it's 400 meter now. So it's a lot more kind of, I don't know if you ask me, I feel like us Florida programs or us Southern programs have the advantage because, you know, we can train. For example, Boston University has a phenomenal, track and field program, et cetera, but they only have an indoor track. I know they do have I think they have some outdoor track. It's a little far away. But anyways, my point being, there's going to be schools like West Point, Auburn, you know, East Carolina, UF, of course, you know, Miami, you know, Maryland, UNF, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, you know, University of South Carolina, you know, so real big programs this weekend. So I'm just excited to see how, you know, we match up with, you know, everyone else. We did great last year overall. So I'm sure we got some great runners this year. So we'll see what goes on with that. It's a two-day event. It's also a pretty big event, or it's actually one of the biggest events in high school track as well. It's like some kind of like special invite kind of situation.
Oh, so, okay. So are they like inviting like special high schools from
countries? Yeah. It's like an invite. Yeah, like the best high school programs or runners, they'll get the invite, and then the college.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So then they'll be like, all right, hey, great job out there, kiddos. But now it's time for the, you know, the big boys and the big gals to go to work. But,
sure. Hey, man, I always love the cross-pollination of high school and college stuff. Like when they get to kind of, like you said, like the high school kids go out there and do their thing. And then the big boys and girls, as you said,
the only good thing about that, the reason why that's important in track and field is only one thing only. And that is, at the end of the day, cause it's an individual sport. There's no one you're relying on, and there's no certain statistics, you're not always a better passer or shooter or whatever. It's just, can you run faster than the other guy or not? You know what I'm saying? So the only thing that's good for those kind of, these high school programs is most of the time high school runners end up PR, getting their PRs because they're going against other really good competition. There'll be some real good runner in some small little town in Florida, runs a 5-minute mile, he's annihilating everyone. Then he goes against the big dogs in Miami and ends up running like a 4:45. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Just because, you're competing with your level. So
I get you. Man. So you find, I'm sorry if this is getting too in the weeds, but so you find that like if they're playing better competition, then it elevates their own play. Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That's absolutely. I went through it myself. I was the 16th seed, and I barely snuck in for some reason in the mile for the Pinellas County Athletic Championship. I was a 16th seed. Ended up 8th place.
Hey, man, that's pretty cool. Heck yeah.
Yeah, just because, I only ran a couple of races. I ran small meets with it was like only against 2 or 3 other high schools. Sometimes those high schools are okay. Sometimes they're good or whatever. So there was only so much, so many kids in front of me or behind me pushing me.
Right.
But then at the, championship event, you have like 4 kids from every Pinellas County school running against you. So first of all, it's a huge herd. You have to take off, first of all, otherwise you're stuck in the back.
Right.
So I was 16th seed, and fun story. I was actually first place for the first 3 laps.
Hey.
That's also, yeah, then I had to, but what happens is, I guess maybe there is some strategy. I don't give a shit about these kind of things, but there's like drafting where you run behind someone in windy weather. So they block the, they kind of take the hit for you with the wind. Huh. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I'm running in front of you, I'm taking all the wind and you're just running right behind me. So yeah. And like, the strategy to do that is they run right behind you. I mean, someone's like right on your tail, so they don't get any of that wind.
Man, that kind of seems like how foul baiting is in the NBA now. I don't know. That kind of seems like a.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't happen too much. And for the most part, it's not much of a huge factor, for the professionals and all that. They're just, second of all, they run in good conditions and, these big meets, they, plan all those things ahead of time or whatever. Sure. But yeah. Because there was a couple kids who were right behind me, and then the 4th lap, you ring the bell, ring, 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 last bell. Right. They all just went right ahead of me. I was cool with them, man. I was so happy, just to be, in the front of the pack. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, hey, man, the more you know. It's great that you're into this track stuff, because, I mean, if you couldn't tell by my maybe perhaps silly line of questions, but I'm not as experienced in that realm. So, it's cool stuff. It's cool stuff. Any closing thoughts on the track team, or are we you want
to? No, man, I'm just excited, man. Just more and more excited now. It's outdoor season. I got a buddy up in UF. I'm actually scratching my head and thinking maybe just pop in for a quick trip, just to see some track and say what's up to my buddy as well. It ain't too far, so
make it a little.
It's like a whole day event. It's like a two day all day event. So get a little. Cool.
Gainesville gets a I don't want to say a bad rep, but I always enjoy going up to Gainesville. It's kind of fun. So you can have a good time up there for sure. But Yeah, we'll check back in, see how they did at the UF relays in a couple of days. We'll check back in next week and give you all some updates and see how the track and field folks did, because ranking and cracking the top 20, that's a big deal. It was kind of an eyebrow raiser, if you will. So that was really fun. But we'll see how they do this weekend and see if they can capitalize on that preseason ranking. But speaking of capitalizing on some stuff, the lacrosse team, my goodness, they had a lot of games this weekend, or a lot of games. They had two games from this past weekend, and it was really action-packed. They absolutely dominated their conference, their first conference matchup against Old Dominion 21-3, and improved them to a perfect 3-0 in AAC play, and they moved them to 7-2 overall for the season. Man, it was just a really impressive game. Musab, were there any key performances that you were – I mean, was the game like that when you score 21 points, you outscore your opponent by 18? I mean, I'm not the biggest lacrosse nerd in the world or anything, but that's a pretty large margin of victory. So what
went down? Yeah, man. Everyone was eating, starting with Sophia Shepnik. She led all the scores, 5 goals, 1 assist. And then, we had 4 different bowls with hat-tricks first, you know, being Sophia Shepnik. Caitlin Tartaglione, Maggie Newton, and Kelly Clearly. So, we were just, dominated from the jump. Possession was a huge thing. So,
absolutely. When you have a game like that, everyone has to eat, and everyone did. So it was a really impressive performance. And game two of this past weekend, they took on Richmond. They took the loss 15-14. But Richmond ranked top 25 in the nation, number 25. They almost pulled off this massive comeback. They had a 4-goal deficit to tie the game late in the fourth quarter. Unfortunately, just couldn't get that victory across the finish line. But, man, it was an excellent effort from this team. You mentioned Sophia Shepnik. Her and Elise Grissette, they each netted 4 goals to lead the scoring effort, while Tartaglione also added a hat trick. They were up 8-3 midway through the second quarter, but man, Richmond, they're tough. You know, they're ranked top 25 for a reason. They managed to climb back into the conference, or into the contest, excuse me. So it was tough, man. It was a tough loss to take. And the goalkeeper, Natalie Eastwood, also had a really, really nice game as well. She recorded 11 saves against a really good Spiders offense. I mean, that team is top 25 for a reason. So it was a really encouraging weekend from the lacrosse team. They had some really outstanding performances across the board. I know going 1-1, it's kind of like, oh, well, they split the weekend. That's not that big of a deal. But you factor in the massive margin of victory in the first one and the fact that they were playing an incredible opponent in that second game and managed to keep it within one, that's really outstanding stuff from this team. And they had some weekly honors and standings. Mr. Tariq, what awards did the did the lacrosse team take home from this past weekend?
Yeah, man, after her 3-goal, 6-draw control performance against Old Dominion, Kelly Clearly was named American Athletic Conference Midfielder of the Week, as well as Maggie Newton getting the honorable mention after racking up a 7-point performance during their little Virginia road trip. And then on top of that, just overall, how USF's lacrosse program's looking is, right now we are in strong position in the conference standings, even with that non-conference loss. So, if you think about it, five different bowls combined for a total of 6 hat tricks, during this 2-game road swing. So I thought that was neat. And then on top of that, a big shout out to Elise Grissette with 100 career goals. Yeah, man. Yeah, I'd seen that on X. I wanted to give a shout out to Coach Mindy McCord for posting that. We are back at Corbett Stadium, and we're going to be hosting Liberty tomorrow, Thursday.
There you go. So make sure to tune in for that if you're around if you're around Fletcher or Fowler, if you're looking for something to do Thursday night. Corbett Stadium, you might as well take a little trip over there and check out the women's lacrosse team. It'll be a fun time. I've walked by those games when they're going on at USF, and they're a blast, man. People get into it. They're all sitting outside, and luckily the weather's actually, knock on wood, it's not too bad. So sitting outside right now, might as well take advantage of it while you can, because it should be a really good time, and they should be in for a good fight against Liberty. They're a pretty solid team as well. But moving on to beach volleyball, they had the Stampede Beach opener. So we'll recap that for you. They had 2 days of competition, and they went 3-1 over that time. They shut out Sam Houston to start things, 5-0. They swept them. It was really impressive. And then they took down UTEP 4-1. So it was 10 consecutive matches. It was a winning streak for USF, and their Conference USA record was extended to 3-0. It was really impressive stuff. And then day two, they took home a victory against Sacramento State 4-1. And then they took their lone loss of the weekend 4-1 against UAB, the Blazers. So it was a really impressive weekend. Obviously, the lackluster finish kind of leaves a bitter taste in your mouth, but going 3-1 over the weekend was really, really impressive. So I was really really pleased with their effort this past weekend for the beach volleyball team. And up next, they are traveling to Atlanta, Georgia, the GSU Diggin' Duels tournament on April 3rd and 4th. So in a couple of days, it's going to be over the weekend. So that should be kind of fun. But shifting our focus to the tennis team, they've been a bit disappointing, but man, this past weekend was fun. Mr. Treek, what happened this past weekend for the men's tennis team, starting with them?
Yeah, our men's tennis team, man, getting some wins this past weekend. But before that, it was a close one, but no cookie. It was a little tough loss at home with Liberty. We had some strong singles performances with Hugo Carr dominating the number one single spot. He won 6-2, 6-2. Elijah Sham and Agustin Coelar also got their straight set wins, but the doubles point was kind of the difference maker. Liberty was able to get that with the 6-3 win. The only win we got from our doubles was 6-3 from James Newton and Toto Lannis at the number two position. The other two courts, yeah, we unfortunately lost. But we rallied back, as I had mentioned to Jonathan, a little Ivy League action with Harvard. So we were able to scrape by a win. It was a signature upset, actually, taken down to the number 48, ranked in the nation, Harvard. It was a high energy battle. Hugo Carr, got the win in a dramatic fashion, battling back from a set down 4-6, then 6-3, then 6-4. Toto Lannis and Elijah Sham got that early spark in singles play, both winning their straight sets to give the Bulls their first lead of the day. And then Gugi Verdes, he came through with a clutch performance at the number five spot, winning a second set tiebreaker, 7-6, just to keep, the Harvard Crimson on their toes. So, it was a lively home crowd, big win. Although, we dropped that, doubles point. Earlier on in the morning, we were to fight through hard with the singles matches, end up with the win. So we got a little doubleheader action going on actually this Friday, April 3rd. We're going to be hosting Charlotte at 11, and then a matchup later with Florida Gulf Coast University.
Very cool. Yeah, you'll have to keep tuned in for that. We'll be talking about that doubleheader next week for the men's tennis team because, hey, it's a conference game against Charlotte, so that's going to be a big one. So we'll definitely be talking about it. And Hugo Carr, man, what a guy. It was cool to see them pull off that victory against Harvard because, Harvard, you think of great tennis schools, Harvard's one of them for sure. So it was really impressive for USF to kind of pull out a victory out of that because, man, that loss to Liberty, it did sting. But, they were able to bounce back. But speaking of some tough some stings, the women's tennis team did not have a great weekend. They took two sweeps, 4-0, 4-0, the first one coming up against the number 26-ranked Wichita State Shockers. They showed some resilience. It was really, really – despite the fact that they got swept, it was a really tough fight from a lot of folks in their unfinished matches. It was a high level test in a hostile road environment, but it's a conference game. So it was a tough loss against a really good team. That's going to happen sometimes. That's how it be sometimes. And SMU game didn't really go much better. Unfortunately, they finished up their road trip in Texas. They had to go to Dallas. It's again, a similar thing. Like all these matches were super close, but USF just couldn't pull it out in the end. So it's kind of tough, but what's next for them? They look to bounce back. They're going to head to Houston to face Rice on Friday, April 3rd. So we'll see how that finishes up. So any closing thoughts on the USF athletics department? We're nearing the end of our episode, Mr. Tariq. Got anything else before we wrap up this show and head to watch the the rocket launch. I think that's going to be our little little break before we go to the
Arbitrum. No, man, just yeah, just as always, man. You know, I'll be on my toes as always, looking out for, you know, what goes on with USF. I think I don't know how I did it, but my social media is just always floods, you know, is flooded with something USF related, which is very refreshing. And it's not just, you know, and what I mean by it's not just basketball, football, man. I'm seeing pop-ups for random things. In fact, I wanted to give some shout out to Hugo Carr and I think it was Ettore Danesi, who were, I think, in the top 100 for college tennis rankings. I was actually thinking about that, just the way, you know, we've been gassing up, you know, Hugo Carr in the past. So, yeah, you know, he's a baller, man. You know, he's I feel like he started out a little slow, but now he's been looking good so far, at least, you know, based on these recaps we've been doing. It's only so much, you know, college tennis you can find to watch.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he's just finding his form, you know. He just had to get back in the swing of things, you know. So, yeah, we'll keep talking about Hugo Carr as well as the rest of the USF athletic department next week. Really appreciate you all for tuning in. Hit that like and subscribe button on the way out if you haven't already, and if you like what you heard, obviously. But you can also give us a follow at RBLR Sports or at RBLR Bulls. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Musab Tariq, for making my job easy, as well as our super producer, Mr. Eureka Wheeler. Tune in next week. But until then, and as always,
go Bulls.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.